Welcome to the Moss Report. Hello, this is Rachel Moss. I am hosting this episode of The Moss Report. Today I have with me Elizabeth Schuler. She is the founder of Patient Navigator LLC. She has also a rich history and background that led her to this path. So thank you so much for joining me. Let's go ahead and dive right in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you didn't start in patient navigation. Can you tell me a little bit about what your career has looked like and how it brought you to this?
Of course. Well, my first career was in the Department of State as a Foreign Service Officer, where I served overseas in embassies and in Washington for almost 25 years. I was led into creating this concept of patient navigation because in 1998, having just returned with my husband and two young children from an assignment in Managua, Nicaragua, and just getting resettled back in the United States, our daughter, who was just past her second birthday, was diagnosed with an inoperable brainstem tumor on September 19th, 1998, in the emergency room. And I had no previous experience in my family or life with any sort of cancer, but suddenly was thrust into this completely unknown universe whose language I didn't speak, yet realizing very fast there's no guidebook, there's no particular lifeline, and we better figure out very fast everything about brain tumors and treatment options and who the doctors are. And in essence, I became my daughter's advocate to make sure that we could save her life and find the right treatments and find the right doctors. So my story is not dissimilar to many people who since early 2000s have decided to take a personal experience they've had either for themselves or a family member and the trials and tribulations and obstacles they had to overcome and what they learned from that and decide they could use it to help other people. So my own personal experience with my daughter led other people to start asking me questions. They had heard about my story. And I realized, you know, when I was going to, after I retired from the Department of State, what I really wanted to do was create a business out of what I had been doing moonlighting for years. And so that's how the idea of Patient Navigator was born. I actually created officially the company in 2004 while I was still working full time at the Department of State. And so, you know, I discovered other women doing the same thing. Not a lot. There were about five of us, and we decided to create the National Association of Healthcare Advocacy, of which I became a president and led for five formative years. And a profession was born. And I suppose I was, well, people tell me I was a pioneer in creating it. And that's what I do full time now.
Well, I would agree with that sentiment. First of all, how is your daughter doing now?
My daughter just turned 25, and she herself is a pediatric nurse in Baltimore. So she survived. She is well. She suffered some hearing loss because we had to do radiation treatments. But she is a thriving, beautiful young woman now working with other children who are involved in the medical system. She, having been on the receiving end, is now on the giving end.
That's funny how it works a lot of the time. You know, I've spoken with a few people who it affects them, and then once they survive and come out the other side, you know, I guess a lot of it is that when your life is touched by cancer or this kind of illness, you're put in a position where you have to learn so much information so quickly in order to make informed decisions, especially when most people wouldn't know that information just living the lives that they would without the diagnosis.
Exactly.
So that sort of rapid education is really where people struggle, because they want to know what their options are and not just, you know, be at the whim of the universe.
Right. And what I discovered is, you know, this was 1998. It's much better now. I mean, internet resources are far more developed and, you know, it's easier to find good information, although people still find a lot of bad information. But I discovered quickly there's no guidebook. And it's not just finding doctors and treatments and doing the research, but a cancer diagnosis affects everything in the family, jobs and school and other siblings, and, you know, trying to keep up with the day to day while dealing with this tremendous fear and uncertainty. And, you know, it's a whole life experience, and it's not just the medical piece of it.
Absolutely. What would you say your patient navigation business really focuses on? What do you provide people with? Like, what do you aim to help people with your service?
Well, it's evolved over the years. And now the work I do really falls into three basic categories. One is care coordination, I would call. And that is everything from, you know, getting doctors to talk to each other and sort of being the quarterback of a medical team for the family. Sometimes it's being the person on the ground for a senior citizen when the adult children are out of state. I would be the one that goes to the doctor's visits, that writes up the notes and keeps the other family members informed. It can include housing searches or housing transitions for seniors. I'm also a certified senior advisor, so I work with a lot of elder care issues. So the bucket of care coordination is pretty broad. The second bucket is on the research side, and I have a medical director whose name is Dave Schlosser, and he specializes in doing clinical trial searches, very personalized annotated searches on cancer or really any medical issue. He's got a master's degree in clinical oncology from a university in Birmingham, England, because there's no comparable degree here. And so we do a lot of in-depth research projects for people who are trying to look into clinical trials. But then again, that itself is another entire universe of knowledge that is hard to learn on the job. And so research is part of our work. And the third main bucket is advocacy. And that is, that would be, you know, helping people get in to see the doctors they need to see, making sure the patient is being heard and listened to and respected, amazingly, well, maybe not so amazingly, but patient-centered care is everyone's goal, but it doesn't always translate into real life. So anything that we can do to advocate, to help connect them with the right resources, find the help they need, implement a plan, remove stress from the administrative aspects of an illness so that they can focus on, you know, healing and recovery.
That's great. I can't imagine. Do you spend a significant amount of time dealing with insurance companies as well?
Well, I used to do more insurance work. I don't really do it now as a separate bucket, but if it comes up in the context of other work we're doing, yeah, we will help with insurance. But that is always, you know, in terms of obstacles to treatment, insurance is probably the biggest one.
So it seems like a lot of people have taken advantage of this service that you offer and that it was really necessary and still is. What was it during your daughter's treatment that really flipped a switch that made you think, wow, someone needs to speak up. Someone needs to be talking for this person. You know, was there a moment where you sort of realized that this was a necessary role that didn't really exist?
Well, yes, because I realized, oh my gosh, you know, I need to learn everything about brain tumors as fast as I can so that I can be informed and educated and, you know, chart a path into this unknown universe. And I realized, well, thankfully, because of my background as a diplomat in the Foreign Service, I have the skills that you need to find your way in a new bureaucracy, to learn a foreign language, the language of healthcare and medicine and cancer, to, you know, deal with a new culture, mm-hmm. a medical culture. These are all things we do as diplomats. I said, well, you know, thank God I can do these things. But what about people who don't have that background, who don't necessarily have, you know, I advocated for the U.S. government. Now I advocate for patients and clients. and when, you know, I showed up for my daughter's first oncologist appointment after she was released from the hospital with 2 pages of typed single-spaced questions, and the oncologist's face turned white, realizing we were going to be there a while. You know, no one should have to go through this without a lifeline. Mm-hmm. And I know I am learning how to do it, but people should not have to learn this during times of extreme duress and fear and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, and then when people started asking me for advice all the time, you know, word kind of spread, I said, you know, I can do this. This is what I want to do when I retire. I want to devote myself to helping people find their way through the healthcare system so they don't get lost and so they get the best treatment and outcomes. And, you know, let me and other people like me deal with the hassles and the obstacles so they can focus on healing and recovery.
Absolutely. I heard somewhere that the average doctor visit, you know, oncology visit lasts about 15 minutes, something like that, tops. So having questions prepared going in, knowing what you need to ask to really make the most of that time and make sure that they're answering your questions is really key.
Right. And, you know, there is what people refer to as white coat syndrome, which is being nervous and anxious when a white coat walks in the door and you know you've only got a few minutes and they, you know, they're looking at their tablet all the time and hardly looking at you. You need someone there by your side to help you, to ask the questions, to make sure they get answered, to not let these doctors dismiss you or rush you out the door. And it's hard to do when you're the patient and already nervous and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's a very important role that an advocate can play.
Absolutely. When you're looking into resources to help patients and direct them towards practitioners and everything, do you recommend going with a sort of holistic approach in terms of having both a conventional oncologist? Do you dabble in nutritionists? What sort of resources do you point people towards? Or is it just based on what they're looking for?
Well, it's really case specific. But actually, I met your grandfather. I heard him speak in Washington, D.C. in 2009 when I took a course sponsored by the Center for Mind-Body Medicine called Cancer Guides. and mm-hmm. he spoke, and I remember it very clearly. And, you know, I've always had an interest in complementary therapies, the mind-body, the nutrition, the spiritual work, very important. But I also, you know, of course, believe we have to use conventional medicine. So it really depends on the diagnosis, the patient's interests. Usually most people are open to suggestions about nutrition and things, but I do believe that conventional medicine with complementary therapies is a good combination. I recently, just a couple of days ago, I suggested to a young woman that she try acupuncture for some pain issues, and she hadn't thought about that. And so people really are not that aware of either Eastern medicine or other modalities that could be used, meditation, nutrition, you know, all sorts of things. And so I do introduce that, and if I feel, you know, when they're receptive to it. And but in a cancer diagnosis, I would not only say, you know, try alternative therapies. I you know, there are results, there is data on treatment for cancer that can and should be accessed.
For sure. How big is the team that you're working with right now through your organization?
There are just three of us. My researcher, Dave Schlosser, he's out in California. And I have a nurse who helps me as needed here in Northern Virginia. She's a nurse at a local hospital as well.
How many patients do you, or how many patients' families do you deal with on a typical, you know, per month or year, however it works?
Well, over the years, I've never added it up, but someone asked me and I kind of looked. It's approaching 1,000 families at this point.
Wow.
But I would say on average, we're doing about six clients at a time. It's been as much as 12. But the thing is, you know, we are not a 1-800 number. We're very personalized. Hiring an advocate is a very personal experience. You have to trust them. You have to build confidence. It's an intimate experience. And so over the years, I've been approached so many times by tech companies who want to make an app to do what I do. I say, I just forget it. That's not how this works. You know, and so the way I do my work is not scalable in a tech or business sense, but that's okay. That's okay because we touch people every day, and you know, we help them get good results, better results, better outcomes, less stress, and that's all I need to do in life. I don't want to be a 1-800 number.
No. So if someone were in a cancer patient's circle and they wanted to help out and really become a resource for them by helping out with some of this navigation, what would you recommend to them to start sort of pursuing this path? How would you recommend that people sort of start to explore navigation for themselves?
For themselves or to create a business?
I would say let's start with for themselves and then go to business.
Yeah. Well, I think when given a diagnosis of cancer or any other serious diagnosis, you know, of course there's those moments of deer in the headlights and when the news hits hard and fast. But in my mind, when diagnosed with a serious illness, there are basically four groups of tasks, as I see it, that a patient should try to organize for themselves. And I'll tell you the four groups, and then I'll just say a couple words about each. So the first group I call Get Smart Fast. We've talked a little bit about that. The second group of tasks is Get Organized. The third is Stand Your Ground Nicely. And the fourth is Always Follow Up. So which I can say a few words about each of those if there's time, if you'd like me to.
Yeah, absolutely, please.
So in the first group, Get Smart Fast, we've talked a little bit about it. And what I mean by that, and this is what I did in the beginning, is become a savvy, health literate advocate for yourself. And that means gathering good information from only credible sources. Beware of Dr. Google. The worst thing I dread hearing from someone is, I just got diagnosed with breast cancer and I went to Google and there are 25 zillion hits. You know, what do I do? So beware Dr. Google. There are a lot of good sites, but health science, but you have to think about, you know, who operates them, who funds them, who's responsible for the content, how often is it updated. And to become a good, to get health literacy on your disease or diagnosis, there are advocacy groups for pretty much everything. And for cancer, my three favorite sites are the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which is cancer.net, government National Cancer Institute, which is cancer.gov, and American Cancer Society, which is cancer.org. But I put that third because a lot of their stuff is about fundraising. But cancer.net with ASCO and cancer.gov with National Cancer Institute are great because those are credible sources. They have guides on just about every kind of cancer, and it's very detailed from symptoms to treatment, to diagnosis, to treatment, to questions to ask your medical team. So I would say start with a credible source on your disease. Avoid Dr. Google and learn the vocabulary of your disease. That's what doctors respect, because, you know, of course, if they say something you don't understand, you have to ask them to say it so you can understand it. But, you know, I just remember when the doctors were telling me for my daughter, well, you know, there's no chemotherapies that work, and, you know, we could try radiation up front. And I'm like, what does that mean? What do you mean radiation up front? So Get Smart Fast is my first group of advice. The second group of tasks I call Get Organized. And what I mean by that is, from the very beginning, take names and take notes on everything. It doesn't matter if you use an app or a small notebook or a computer program. Just make a system that works for you and keep a chronology of conversations, doctor visits, diagnostic and lab results, symptoms, medications, who you talk to, what their title is, phone numbers. I encourage people to buy like a plastic sleeve that you can carry around, or a little binder, three hole punch everything, put it in there, and put all the business cards of all the medical professionals into that plastic sleeve, so you have them all the time. Another piece of the Get Organized bucket is, you know, prepare a medical history and medication list that you can carry around with you. And that's something we do for some of our clients when they want it, is we write up a summary narrative of medical history, because, you know, doctors will never look at a big chart. And when you have a complicated disease, the folders get pretty big pretty fast. So I try to get that summary to the doctor or nurse before the visit even starts. So when it does begin, the first question out of the doctor's mouth is not, "So what brings you here?" which is not usually the case with cancer, but in other cases.
Sure.
So prepare a medical history and medication list and keep it updated. And the third is, you know, read and understand your insurance policy. Again, another entire universe of vocabulary that you have to master, that it's easy to ignore when, you know, things just get paid. But when things get complicated, you do have to figure out your insurance policy and learn the vocabulary, you know, out of network, medication tiers, denials, appeals, deductibles, coinsurance, pre-authorization. It's another whole can of worms, but unfortunately, it's very, very important. Yes. On the third bucket, which was, oh, did you have a question? Sorry.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay. The third bucket is what I call stand your ground nicely. And what that means is make friends and learn names, especially to doctors you'll be seeing frequently. The front office staff, the aides, the nurses, the billing office. You know, it helps to know the names of people and just be nice to them. And you know, they'll remember you as well in that way and be more apt to make things easier for you. The second part of stand your ground is come prepared. You know, bring questions to your doctor after you've done your good research on credible sources, but don't dump 12 inches of Google research on the desk. They will not look kindly to that. But if you have targeted questions that show you've done your homework, they will respond favorably and it'll be a much more productive visit. I always think it's helpful to bring a note taker. Sometimes doctors will let you record the visit, but you have to ask permission, of course. Be mindful of the doctor's time, but don't let yourself get rushed out of the office if you haven't got all your questions answered. Another element of standing your ground is get second or third opinions. If you know, in most cancer diagnoses, you usually want to get a second opinion. You are not tied to the hospital or doctor or clinic that first diagnosed you. People think, you know, they have to stay with who they got from the outset, but you don't. So you should ask for a full range of treatment options and research them. You are the center of the medical team that you're building, so you have to be satisfied with the team's credentials, experience, and bedside manner. And you know, don't settle for anything less than what you deserve. And don't feel bad about getting second opinions. A lot of people still are reluctant to do that. They're afraid the doctor will get mad at them. And then, you know, always ask about medications or tests that you're being prescribed and why. There might be cheaper generic medications. You might not need another MRI so soon. The thing is that doctors, and not just in cancer, but in many situations, they practice defensive medicine. And doctors have absolutely no idea how insurance works or what anything costs. Zero. They have no idea.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to sort of, don't be afraid to question, like, do I really need another MRI this soon? Or is that test absolutely necessary? Because, you know, they'll test everything they can think of just to sort of protect themselves. So just be mindful of what meds you're being given and why, and you know, all the tests that you're being given. Keep track of them. And the
that
final
point that you, oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That point that you brought up of asking why they're recommending certain things is I feel like that's a really good universal tip as well, because if you go to another doctor and they said I need to get another MRI, and they're like, well, I don't think that you need another MRI. Did they say why? And you're like, I don't know. They just said that I would need one. It sort of puts you at a disadvantage for getting that second opinion and starting from a higher plane of, you know, why you might need a treatment or what the other options for that specific symptom or curiosity are.
Exactly. Yep. The so last group of advocating for yourself is always follow up. My first rule in that category is never assume things will work out as they should. If someone tells you that he or she will do something, whether, you know, consult with a colleague, order a test, fax a document, call you with results, talk to your insurance, phone in a prescription, make sure you follow up. All too often, things that are promised fail to happen. And this can be serious. You know, if a test result doesn't get sent to the right doctor in a timely manner, that can be a problem. So unfortunately, because of, you know, the complicated and inefficient nature of our healthcare system, including that we still use technology from 1980, known as the fax, you know, you have to make sure things don't fall through the cracks. Another tip would be schedule your appointments as early as possible. A lot of these specialists book up well in advance. You can always ask to be put on a cancellation list to try to get it sooner. And you can call often to see if there are any cancellations. And that's where the make friends with the people who answer the phone part comes in, because you know, if you're on a cancellation list, they'll remember, oh, so-and-so was hoping to get in sooner. There's a cancellation. I'll call her. And then, you know, throughout the process, whatever the illness is, whether it's cancer or some other diagnosis, just continue your medical education. Breakthroughs, especially in cancer, happen all the time, every day. Once you have selected your credible sources, keep checking them for new information. Even Google alerts on, you know, a specific topic can be useful to stay updated. And that's an important thing when you're using online information, is make sure to see when it was last updated, because things change frequently, and there is always new information and breakthroughs.
Absolutely. I believe PubMed also does push notifications for if one of your tags, keywords, is mentioned in a new study, something like that.
Yeah, that's a little more that's like research 201 or 301, but certainly something to do. A very good source. PubMed is a great source. And to do a push alert for that would be an excellent idea.
Fantastic. Well, that is all such wonderful, wonderful advice. Do you have any words of encouragement or parting thoughts, anything like that, before we wrap up?
Well, you know, I get calls from so many people who feel lost in the system or dismissed or overlooked. And it's especially a problem with women, and it's especially a problem with people who have pain issues. You know, and just, I would say, don't give up. The healthcare, you know, when people say, oh, we have the greatest healthcare system in the world, I say, well, that's true only if you have excellent insurance and a lot of money and some connections. Because, you know, I recently tried to get someone into Mayo Clinic and they turned her down despite the voluminous data and records we sent. And I was left with the feeling that, you know, this is only people with connections can get into Mayo, because this hasn't been the first time. Not to just pick on Mayo, but I'm saying even getting into a lot of these doctors who are at the top of their field, either academically researching or clinicians. It's really hard to get in sometimes and make you jump through a lot of hoops. And, you know, that's where the money and the insurance come in. And so there's inherent bias in our system. It's a system that works really well for the rich and the well-connected with good insurance. But I would tell everyone else, don't give up. And, you know, use those advocacy rules. Stand your ground. Be prepared. Do your homework. Speak up for yourself. Bring someone to help you do that and to take notes. I don't know that it's ever going to get less complicated. It's so expensive. I guess my main piece of advice is know that there are people like me out there who can show you the way. We've charted the course. We've been in the trenches. We know where the landmines are. We can help you avoid the landmines and find better outcomes and eliminate some of the stress of dealing with ACRS diagnosis in our complicated healthcare system. And, you know, never lose hope. There's always hope. There are always new medical breakthroughs, and there are people who can help. And, you know, now, like, hospitals and different organizations are now hiring what they have called navigators many years after I followed the word. But, you know, for example, you'll find a lot of breast cancer navigators in hospitals. And that's a good thing, but keep in mind that their loyalty is to the hospital that pays them. We private advocates, our loyalty is only to our clients. And their main job is to navigate you through the hospital system, you know, get your appointments set up, send in your prescriptions, things like that, which is all extremely helpful. But we private advocates, you know, we're with you through the entire continuum, wherever it leads you. So there is help, there are resources. Just don't lose hope and keep going and ask for help. Too many people don't want to ask for help. Ask for help from your friends, your neighbors, the organizations you believe to, and be specific, because people want to help, but tell them, so, okay, come and mow my lawn. or could you go grocery shopping for me? People want to help. So ask for and accept help. And that's hard for a lot of people to do. But, you know, cancer progress marches on, and complementary therapies are a real and positive part of the healing process. So, you know, I encourage investigation of those, and, you know, just count on your friends and family and your own strength and courage to get you through.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming and talking with me. Thank you so much for what you had to say. I think that everyone's going to benefit really a lot from hearing that, knowing that they have the power over what they do with their treatment plan. Anyway, you have been listening to Elizabeth Schuler, founder of Patient Navigator, a true pioneer in the field. I am Rachel Moss, and this has been The Moss Report. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Moss Report. Visit our website at themossreport.com and subscribe to hear more discussion of cancer treatment options, alternative research, and more. For more information about Dr. Moss and his work, including scheduling phone consultations, go to mossreports.com.